Hello everyone and welcome to the Smash Business Show. Today is Tuesday, April 22, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Wart Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Firstly, we're going to discuss the highlights of day one of the inaugural Dubai AI Week, which is currently ongoing. Secondly, Saudi Arabia's Aramco and BYD are partnering to develop EV technology. Thirdly, PepsiCo has opened a regional HQ in Riyadh, and it's going to invest 30 million riyal in an R&D center. So Saudi cash revives boxing's Don King era, says World Boxing Council Chief. And for the final one, we're going to be discussing how after pistachio, cocoa price rise can be concerning for the UAE's $736 million chocolate market.
Very first story, day one highlights of the inaugural Dubai AI Week, which is happening under the patronage of His Highness Sheikh Hamdan. So day one of Dubai AI Week 2025 kicked off with high-level discussions and bold declarations on the future of artificial intelligence, led by none other than His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Crown Prince of Dubai and Chairman of the Dubai Future Foundation.
Now, speaking at the AI retreat held at the Museum of the Future, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan said that a government's ability to keep pace with AI will be a defining benchmark of its success. He emphasized that Dubai is at a critical stage, striving to become one of the world's most agile and advanced cities in shaping technological transformation.
And the retreat brought together 150 global experts and government officials. Sheikh Hamdan joined four closed-door roundtables covering data and governance, infrastructure, investment, and talent development, all part of a larger vision to harness AI for economic and societal growth.
Now, the Minister of State for Artificial Intelligence, Omar Sultan Al-Ulama, set the tone with a powerful keynote titled, "The Next 5 to 10 Years, a Force Multiplier of a Nation's Potential." Now, he told a room of global leaders that Dubai's ethos on AI is rooted not just in innovation or regulation, but acceleration.
Al-Ulama said every future digital company in Dubai must be AI first. He pointed to UAE unicorns like Kareem and Souq.com as examples of AI-driven success. Over the next year and this year, every government entity will be ranked on its AI integration.
Ooh, yeah. That one's tough. Now, he also unveiled plans to build a deep talent pipeline with education at the core. Now, more than 10,000 students participated in AI programs last year, and Dubai is doubling down. Now, day one wrapped with a clear message. Dubai is not observing the AI revolution. They're leading it. That's really what they're doing.
And at the event, just not a part of the script, but at the event, there was so many people and so many stories and things came out. Just like to give you a hint of what was happening. So Emirates Group, they said that aligning education with AI is key to preparing future talent. So very big emphasis on education. IBM. Also said that AI is reshaping business future in Dubai and the region and globally as well, very clearly. Interestingly, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, he attended a Dubai assembly for AI during AI Week. And it was a very well-packed, very big day. So there's Emirates Tower where everything is happening, the Dubai Future Museum, everything is happening there. And then there's small events that are happening. So it's kind of like an AI festival, I think. They're calling it a week. But I think it's an AI festival.
To be honest with you, I can't even believe that it's a real thing. But you know what he was, what the Minister of AI was saying in the UAE Majid? Yeah. First of all, I just want to put out there that he's one of the first AI ministers.
He is the only one. There is no world, AI minister still in the world.
Yeah, there's no AI ministers. You just have people like Donald Trump who hire Elon Musk for the government. But anyways, my point is you know, he said that, you know, AI is accelerating and we're seeing this. You know, just yesterday we were discussing how, you know, the UAE is the first in the world to establish that they're going to use AI to write their laws and amend their laws. But Majid, it's almost scary. And I'll tell you why. And I feel like this has so many implications. For example, you know how there's like an AI me?
They're called AI twins, digital twins.
So there's an AI me that has a voice. And it's just this idea that, you know, it can be used without you knowing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And
yeah, but with all this technology, I think more scrutiny is coming. I remember we did this one video of this Chinese guy who was trying to explain that how a Hermes bag is Hermes. My wife was dissing me for saying it wrong, but Hermes, I think. And Hermes bag, how it is made, what products are used, which thing costs how much.
It amounts to $1,300.
And we buy it for $20,000. But the funny thing was the comment that came on it, and one guy was like, oh, he's deepfake. So with all this technology, with all this technology coming, even people who are normal and we believe they are normal and they exist, people are calling their videos, their original videos, as deepfake as well. So I think even if your voice is cloned or if something happens, you can always claim, like in my era, it was like, oh, this is Photoshopped. That was the term. Like everyone used it. Oh, this is Photoshopped. Even with videos, they were like, Photoshopped. You can't Photoshop a video. But yeah, so that was the term. But now I think the new term that has been coined is that it's deepfake, it's AI, it's a clone of me, it's not me. So yeah, really interesting times.
No, but by the way, it is affecting the market though. I had one of my family members, Majid, who was telling me that they were walking in the mall beside like Prada, Gucci, Chanel, and he said that for the first time he noticed they were just like empty.
Yeah.
They were empty. Yeah. So I know that people are thinking about this, and I've seen a lot of videos of wealthy people coming out and saying that, you know, what's the point of me buying this stuff then? Yeah. It doesn't distinguish you from anyone else now that the price has actually been revealed. You might just be getting ripped off.
Yeah.
You never know what you are buying. You are being ripped off. But I think
luxury brands are more like investments or status symbols. Those products are not utilizable in the truest sense of what, for example, a bag, you use it to keep stuff in it. But those luxury brands, they don't sell you a bag to keep stuff. They give you a prestige with that bag. So I don't think anyone puts anything in those bags. Maybe a lipstick or maybe a phone cover.
They do. That's why Jane Birkin was famous, by the way. The lady who actually founded it, because if you see the way that she used her Birkin bag, she would throw a bunch of stuff on it. She'd leave it on the ground. It was like a really big bag, a lot of paperwork. That's how she used her bag.
But I don't think Birkins are used for that now. Everyone uses as a status symbol
now,
right?
No, but some people do put a lot of stuff in it. But I just remembered something, Majid. I think with the UAE, what's also making them really special is the fact that, you know, although they're establishing all these AI laws, they acknowledge that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of security implications that are associated with it, a lot of scary things. Like, how are your rights being protected? So that's why, you know, they created a regulatory intelligence office. And Majid, I think it's so important because it's like, you know, like, for example, you know, just yesterday I was sitting with Saima and she was like, oh, by the way, like, Ward, your voice was one of the best voices that we cloned. Yeah. And for some reason, it was your voice who sounded natural with AI. Yeah. So that means that with some people, AI clones their voice, and with some people, it doesn't clone them really well. Yeah. And so I was just thinking about it. Like, imagine in the government, they take one of the employees' voices, right? I'm just giving you guys, like, a hypothetical of why there's security reasons with this. Say they clone someone's voice, right? And this voice is the voice that's meant to tell the laws or something, right? And this person doesn't know.
No, obviously they know, but I'm saying,
Majid, okay, they know that their voice was cloned. Who's to say that this voice is not going to be used after they leave the company?
For example, we use 11 Labs. We're very open about AI.
You honestly really don't know what people will do.
You can't clone it without them giving you a sample. Remember, you recorded a sample. I recorded a sample. A lot of people recorded a sample.
But I'm seeing what
and
that
And then
voice
I log on to 11 Labs.
Or like, think of it like this.
It can't be used.
What if after it's actually cloned, they take your voice, right? Your voice, what if it's used to say something that you didn't approve or you don't actually like what's being said?
No, but when you
think about it
that,
like that, that's what I mean when I say it's, for me, I think that's the ethical part. Or like, what if you as an employee leave, but they're like, oh my God, we cloned such a good voice. We're going to keep using it.
Not use it. Obviously,
really think
once
so.
Once you're not an employee, this is the thing.
I don't
with
know
fashion.
The laws involved with this.
The fashion industry is doing this. They're cloning their models. So models now, soon enough, like in 3 to 4 years, will become extinct. They'll just give their digital twin. They'll pose in different ways, and that will be taken and converted into a digital twin. So you won't need models to pose for pictures for any brands. But till the time the contract runs with that model, one day, if Gigi Hadid plans to give a digital twin to some big brand, after the contract ends, they can't use her pictures. So, or maybe these contracts will run longer because the model doesn't have to work a lot. So, everything will have, and that is where UAE is very great, that they have proactive policies for everything. So, they're implementing it into legal framework, and then they will create other frameworks. They'll try to implement it in literally everything. But with that implementation, before that implementation, there's like thousands of hours of work that is being put in to make it safe, to make it possible and not make AI hallucinate. So yeah, long discussion. We have other stories. Let's move on to the next one. Saudi Aramco and China's leading electric vehicle maker BYD have signed an agreement to explore closer collaboration on new energy vehicle technology. The move brings together the world's largest crude exporter, Aramco, and one of the top EV manufacturers, BYD. Just to give you a side note, BYD beat Tesla last year in revenue and profits as both nations look to shape the future of mobility.
This is like a queen and a king coming together. I would say in this case, Saudi Arabia is a king. Now, the agreement includes joint research, the development of new technologies and initiatives to improve transport efficiency. Now, while specific project details and timelines weren't disclosed, the deal marks a significant shift for Aramco, which has traditionally focused on internal combustion engines.
And in a statement, Aramco's senior VP for technology, Ali Al-Mishari, said the company is exploring a range of options to optimize transport from lower carbon fuels to advanced powertrain concepts. He emphasized that multiple approaches are necessary to support a practical energy transition.
Now, Saudi Arabia has been heavily investing in electric vehicles, aiming to become a manufacturing hub as part of Vision 2030. Now, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman plans for EVs to make up a third of all vehicles on Saudi roads by the end of the decade, with a goal of reaching net zero emissions by 2060. I think that's achievable.
Yeah. The Public Investment Fund is a major investor in Lucid Motors and has launched its own EV brand, Seer, under Lucid Motors. Meanwhile, Tesla has recently opened operations in the kingdom, signaling growing confidence in Saudi Arabia's electric vehicle ambitions. And this comes on the back of Tesla being launched recently. Yes, we talked about it.
You know, Majid, this is so satisfying to see.
Yeah.
It is BYD, Chinese BYD, and Saudi Aramco, the top oil exporter in the world, coming together as Trump, as the U.S. is trying to come down on China.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the Gulf to continue to work with them, continue to see their potential, you know, this signals to a greater shift of China working with the Middle East more.
Yeah, that's has always been the Middle Eastern policy, especially Saudi and UAE. Don't fight with anyone, trade with everyone, do business with everyone. We care about trade only. We only care about how you can benefit us and how we can benefit you. So that's the best policy right now in the world, to be honest, with so much division happening in the world. And on the note of Saudi Arabia, another big brand, and again Saudi Arabia. So PepsiCo, not Pepsi only, PepsiCo, the whole company, which has chips and all those brands.
Soleil's, Schweppes, I believe Doritos, Cheetos.
Yeah.
What else? There's also a Mountain Dew, 7-Up,
Pepsi,
obviously. Pepsi,
obviously, yeah.
But so, yeah, sorry, go
PepsiCo
on.
PepsiCo has announced plans to open a major research and development center in Saudi Arabia, R&D to be short, focused on crafting products tailored to Middle Eastern tastes. The U.S. food and beverage giant said they'll invest 30 million Saudi riyals in this facility, which is roughly 8 million, and it will be the largest of its kind in the Gulf, and it will be located in Riyadh.
Now, this center aims to develop products with Arab tastes and Arab flavors. Now, according to Mohammed Shilbaya, PepsiCo CEO for the Middle East and North Africa, the announcement came as the company inaugurated its new regional headquarters in Riyadh's King Abdullah Financial District.
Yeah, and Saudi Arabia is PepsiCo's largest market in the MENA region, in the Gulf region, home to popular brands like we talked about it, Lay's, Aquafina, and Mountain Dew. The company's new RHQ, Riyadh headquarters, can accommodate, or regional headquarters, can accommodate up to 150 staff members. And under local regulations, the Saudi national regulations, that you need 40% of your workforce to be Saudi nationals. So out of 150, at least 60 people will be Saudi
That's
nationals.
very
So it creates
interesting.
jobs as well for Saudis.
Now, attracting global players like PepsiCo is a major win for the Saudi government. You know, it follows new rules enforced since January last year, requiring international firms to set up regional headquarters in the kingdom if they want to access public sector contracts.
Yeah. And until recently, most multinationals ran their regional operations from Dubai or Abu Dhabi or from this part of the Middle East region, UAE. But Saudi Arabia's economic diversification drive and its large youthful population is shifting the center of gravity. And Shilbaya said that there is a race for talent. Now, there's no but when you talk about Saudi Arabia. So,
There
yeah.
definitely isn't, and I think,
Yeah.
You know, with the fact that at least 40% of the staff must be Saudi
Yeah.
nationals. It reminds me of this. There was this initiative that took place, I think it was like 2 months ago, Majid. It was called the Golden Handshake. And
Yeah.
basically, what happened
Last
is,
year, actually, in November-ish, not
yeah,
this year.
it was the Golden
Yeah.
Handshake. And what essentially happened is
Yeah.
that a lot of Saudi Arabians who were considered, I believe, redundant in the
Not
workplace.
redundant, old age employees near, not like
Not all of them were old
written
aged.
officially 45 or 50 plus, but people who are not able to like now run as fast as the digital and AI technology is running. They
So
were offered like a golden handshake.
they were,
It
so
was a good
basically,
amount.
a really, really good amount. And I
Yeah.
think they were giving it to them over a good amount of years.
Yeah.
It was not something immediate, so it was
Yeah.
going to take time. So, the fact that those people, even if they may leave those jobs, they have options at a company like
Yeah.
PepsiCo, where 40% of the company is Saudi
Yeah.
nationals. And I think what's interesting is seeing that, they have this aim to develop Arab tastes and Arab flavors. And I was telling Majid how, just recently, Milaf Cola was launched
Yeah.
in Saudi Arabia. And basically, it's a soda that's made completely of dates. And I was telling Majid, I was like, definitely Pepsi's gonna copy this.
Yeah.
It's definitely gonna release
And we
something like
also had
this.
this discussion just before we move on to the next story that I saw this in Spinneys near my
Yeah.
house, and it was 7.5 dirhams. So compared to Pepsi, which is like 1.5, 2 dirhams, it's going to have to like attract a lot of people because you can buy 3 or 4 cans for the same price. But a date-based cola, because it will be a newer taste for everyone's palates. Everyone is so used to Pepsi, Coke, Mirinda, 7-Up that they will have to like do something. But it's done good in Saudi Arabia. That is why I remember Lulu Group and another company, they all three of them had a contract. And it's available in Lulu now. But I think from Lulu, it's going to other places as well. So yeah, try it. Tell us, how do you like Miraf Cola? It's
Please
available
do.
now in UAE. Tell us. I didn't buy it. I will buy it for sure someday when I feel like it. And I'll tell you how it tastes like. I'll bring one here. Me and Worth can do a taste test here on this
Yes,
matchy business show.
we will.
Like, is it worth 7.5 or not?
I think it will be.
It
I
will be,
really do
yeah.
think it will be.
Yeah, so.
Just a segue into our next topic. Saudi Arabia is reviving the golden era of boxing, once dominated by legendary promoter Don King. Now, that's according to World Boxing Council President Mauricio Sulaiman, who spoke to Bloomberg during his visit to Riyadh for the WBC Boxing Grand Prix.
Suleiman said the biggest money is paid here in Saudi Arabia and has been for now 2 years. They're bringing back the Don King era, referencing the high-profile Vegas fights of the past. In Saudi Arabia, millions are being poured into the sport, with prize purses exceeding $100 million.
Now, this transformation is being driven by Turkil Sheikh, head of the General Entertainment Authority. His efforts have already brought global attention, including Tyson Fury's blockbuster bouts against
Alexander
Alexander Usyk.
Usyk.
Now, the first, dubbed the Ring of Fire, saw 1.5 million pay-per-view buys and drew A-list stars like Cristiano Ronaldo and Eminem.
Yeah, and Saudi's growing influence in boxing is part of a wider strategy to diversify the economy, elevate the kingdom's global image, and build its sports tourism industry. It's also backing a new boxing promoter in partnership with TKO Group Holdings, owner of WWE and UFC.
Now, Sulaiman hinted at future collaborations with the kingdom, including global tournaments and a boxing museum. He believes Saudi investment could even unify the fractured world of boxing if managed correctly. As for sustainability, he says the money looks set to keep flowing.
Yeah, the problem with this is that everyone is now questioning Saudi Arabia. Will they keep investing the same amount that they've been investing in the last 2 years?
Because yeah.
Oil is down.
They're saying that they just signed checks because they have endless money.
So all these things are happening, and Saudi is very reliant on oil still. They have diversified a lot. They've become very less dependent, but still I think 45, 50, 60% of their dependence is still on oil. So yeah, let's see if they keep investing in boxing and Formula One and football and whatever sport you say. They are investing in it. 2-3 days ago, Smashy Sports, good segue into one of our another verticals. Smashy Sports did a story that $70 million are the price for the esports World Cup, which is happening next year, this year in Saudi Arabia. Last year it was $60 million. This year it's $70 million. So you're getting so much money just for playing games.
So it's basically, it's going up.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. They're investing a lot of money.
No, I don't think of it like that. You said that they're just getting money for playing games.
Yeah, they are. Esports is just literally playing. But yeah, it takes a lot of time, a lot of practice, a lot of hours of gaming to become that good that you will win something. So there's a lot of games. There's nearly 50 titles involved, 50 games involved. And the biggest prize, I think, that's the pool prize, $70 million. The biggest prize is for, I think, COD or Switch game. I don't remember correctly. But the biggest prize is nearly $7 million. Mm. And usually there's teams of 5 people playing one game. So 5 people playing games, beating other teams, $7 million. Not bad.
That is it's a one-and-a-half-month-long
whole event. Starts in July, ends in August. So yeah, it's going to be a very nice event. But again, coming back, money. Saudi Arabia is putting literally money everywhere just to diversify. And it's paying dividends.
Honestly, do you blame them, though? I don't. Because, I thought about something, Majid. And we see it now. We see it how, there's a rise of the electrical vehicle industry.
Yeah.
There's a rise of artificial intelligence. And maybe we're not going to see the difference in 20 or 30 years or even 40 or 50 years. But imagine in a century. Give it like a century. Truly, how is the world going to change? Are we going to continue using oil and fossil fuels to develop products?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? So I understand why they have fear associated with diversifying and why they're really... Because right now, of course, oil, it's such a great commodity.
Yeah.
But give it a century, how much things are really going to change and how much people are actually going to use oil. Things are going to change entirely.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that from now, I think, the fact that they're trying to diversify so hard and invest so much into it, it's almost kind of like a paranoia. A fear of we don't want to fall behind. And I think an even better purpose of that, we don't want to leave our, future generations to struggle because of decisions that we make. We can't keep relying on oil. So, no, I think these investments are great. I know they're just, I know they're just games, but it makes sense because I truly feel like we're approaching a dawn of the techno. Seriously, the techno world, but... Anyways, for the next topic, so basically after pistachio, it was also discovered that cocoa prices have soared. Now, the UAE's $736 million chocolate market is feeling the heat. An analysis by AGBI reveals that manufacturers are being squeezed by rising production costs while trying to keep up with evolving consumer tastes.
And amid the pressure, one sweet success has stood out. Everyone knows about it. Dubai chocolate, which is also called
our favorite
fixed chocolate. But the general term Dubai chocolate is used for the idea of the chocolate pistachio and kunafa and tahini. So created by Dubai resident Sara Muda during her second pregnancy, it's gone viral, sparking long queues and strict purchase limits in luxury stores abroad.
Now, its popularity has truly, I feel, underscored a global shift toward premium treats with Middle Eastern flavors, or should I say Dubai flavors. Yeah. Now, for younger consumers, Instagrammable innovation is so key. You know, as a young consumer myself, I can say that this is true. Now, this demand has helped shield the premium segment from price-sensitive shocks, even as cocoa prices have nearly tripled since March 2023.
And between March 2024 and January this year, 2025, cocoa prices doubled, touching $12,500
a ton
due to weak West African harvest. While prices have eased recently, new trade tariffs, thanks to Mr. Trump, and sustainability regulations could soon impact UAE manufacturers reliant on global supply chains.
Now, to stay profitable, brands are turning to shrinkflation. What really is that? Now, offering smaller sizes at the same price and experimenting with new flavors and formats. Now, despite challenges, demand remains strong during key occasions like Eid and Diwali. Now, the brands that adapt fastest will win in this fusion of tradition and trend.
Yeah, that's the funny thing, that with UAE, we didn't feel a lot of effect, because the story we did was like, the title was a question, that did you feel it, that did you see your chocolate becoming smaller, or did you see that, oh, from 3 dirhams it became 4 dirhams or 5 dirhams? Since 2023, it's been 2 years. Then,
like, chocolate prices were rising. Yeah, honestly, I did notice.
Yeah, everyone, like, because it's so minor. Sometimes I only know it because there's this Snicker ice cream, again chocolate. I saw its price going from the smaller bar, going from 4.5 to 6-ish now, 6.5, 6.25 something.
I love that ice cream, by the way. I get the Galaxy one.
So I've been here 2.5 years. The first Snickers ice cream, a smaller version, the stick version, not the cone version, I bought was 4.5 something, and now it's 6. So in 2 years, I saw it going up 2 dirhams.
Yeah.
And now when you read these numbers and stories, you realize, okay, cocoa prices are going
even
up.
Even with Bounty, like, I just noticed with chocolate in general, when I go buy it, I'm like, why is this over 5 dirhams now?
Yeah. And with the only chocolate that I really love and enjoy is M&M's, the peanut ones. And with that, I've eaten it so much that now I can feel it, that the chocolate coating above it is going like smaller. So usually when earlier I used to eat it, I literally felt it. That is why I did the story. I was like, yeah, this is happening. So you earlier
imagine, that
would
is
eat
very
it.
Specific.
Yeah, I eat very like limited amount of sweets. So whatever I eat, I remember. So M&M's, when you take a bite, you feel the chocolate, and then comes the peanut. Now, immediately the peanut is there, and you're like, okay, something happened here. But it's very difficult to like gauge it. It's very difficult to identify it. But it shrinkflation has been a very long concept, which has been used since 10 years, since I remember. So yeah, the only thing good about UAE is because we have so many people from so many countries, and hence so many occasions, that there is demand. So because of so much demand, the prices are not that much.
Yeah,
high.
It was just Easter yesterday. Happy Easter to those celebrating, by the way. And I noticed that when I went on noon, we basically have a friend who was celebrating to order them Easter eggs, they all ran out of stock.
Yeah.
They were all gone.
And with Easter also, like, Pope Francis died at the age of 88. Exactly.
Yeah,
and
from,
we should
believe he was struggling with pneumonia for months, and then he died with a stroke.
And one of our one of the people that we follow a lot for news and comments, Naguib Soares, the Egyptian billionaire, he said that he was a great guy, and our feelings with the people who have faced this loss. We were talking to Millie, she worked in our office, she was sad. So yeah, our feelings go out for people who lost their religious leader, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
and I think with the Pope, he also touched so many people's hearts. Yeah. You know, not just.
I think he was very vocal on Gaza.
Yeah.
He called it a genocide, and he was like, "End it," because kids are dying and all that.
And he was he was supporting those who are trying to combat climate change. He was supporting the Yemeni community. So you know, I think Naguib with that one, he really hit a spot in saying that. You know, he had so much wisdom and so much tolerance.
Came in 2019, you did the story. I saw, he visited the UAE and last in 2019.
Yeah, 2019. 180,000 people attended that mass. I mean, that number. And I found out that it was Chris Fade who hosted it.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe Chris Fade that?
Did, I saw some headline that he hosted that event or something.
But there's, so, yeah. I can't find a video of him, though.
Yeah, maybe. More focus was on Pope, so everyone forgot about Chris Fade. But we haven't forgotten about you, Chris Fade. Well, met him.
Yeah,
this event.
I did.
Saw the video.
I did meet Chris, and you know what I honestly have to say? He's, you know, when you actually think about it, I know some people might just think about him as like a radio host, but that man is really smart.
Yeah.
Because think about it, Majid, we've never actually, like in the UAE, in we've never had a Chris Fade before.
Yeah.
He almost saw a gap in this market.
And we didn't have a niche for himself.
We didn't have someone, I don't even think it's almost like a niche. You know how like in every single country, there's just this like one host who's at every single event, who's representing the country. We had that gap here. We didn't actually have anyone. And he filled that gap. So I think what he did there, it's really smart. And honestly, he's such a good host. He really is. Like a place.
The energy that guy has.
Imagine, I'm telling you, a place could be completely empty and he'll start speaking and everyone will just come like flies. Yeah. They'll just appear out of nowhere.
He has this charisma about himself.
He does. Yeah. He really does. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You can find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production. Part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners. It's going up. Thank you for making it possible. See you tomorrow.